Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday, July 8th. Currently 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Mostly sunny skies and 58 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Park City. Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, we've got pretty gorgeous weather across northern Utah today. Northwest flow and high pressure to the west of us should keep our skies clear and near seasonal temperatures. In fact, we're climbing to about 84 for our high in Park City and 91 in Heber. 80 is the average high temperature for Park City. So the average highs or near average highs are going to go away as high pressure continues to strengthen over northern Utah throughout the rest of this week. Temperatures overnight about 56 with sunshine again on Tuesday. Highs near 87 tomorrow, and then we're in the 90s for the rest of the week. 92 on Wednesday, mid-90s Thursday, Friday. There's excessive heat watches for the Wasatch Front, so Wasatch back not included in any excessive heat or heat advisories just yet, but we will be well above average by about 15 degrees through the end of the week. A little bit of change for the weekend. Some moisture rotating around the ridge should bring partly cloudy skies Saturday, Sunday. Temperatures remain in the mid-90s on Saturday. And on Sunday, 90 degrees for the high. There's a 10% chance of a stray shower or storm. Moisture content right now looks pretty limited. Unfortunately, we could use some showers. Heber also looking at low 90s, we mentioned today, with more sunshine tomorrow. Mid-90s are expected. Highs in the triple-digit territory by Wednesday. 99 is expected. 102 on Thursday with temperatures to 101 on Friday. So potentially some record high temperatures even for portions of the Wasatch Back, but dropping to about 97 on Sunday. So enjoy the last day today of somewhat more seasonal temperatures before we really crank up the heat for the rest of the week.
Okay. Thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. Later on, local singer-songwriter Mary Beth Mazier is with details about her upcoming song camps happening later this month. A few scholarships are available. Park City Community Foundation Member Services Manager Rebecca Blanchett has details on this year's Women's Giving Fund grant finalist and Park City Music Festival Director Russell Harlow kicking off the 41st season this Saturday. Taking a look at some local news now, Wasatch County shoppers will see a new sales tax on their receipts in January. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the money will go to transit as well as some public safety needs.
After months of discussion, the Wasatch County Council voted to implement a new 0.3% sales tax at its meeting Wednesday. It will apply to most purchases, excluding gas and groceries. The tax is expected to generate roughly $3.6 million in revenue. County leaders say they expect to use the funds for projects such as accessible transit, increased bus frequency, and better microtransit service. About $900,000 would go to the Sheriff's Office for public safety improvements. Midway resident Jeff Chevalier lambasted the council for scheduling the public hearing the day before the 4th of July holiday, saying the timing made it difficult for residents to share their opinions. Though Chevalier says he's been a regular public transportation user in other places he's lived and visited, he says it isn't the right choice for the Heber Valley. He objects to microtransit in particular, vans that take riders to destinations in the valley that aren't accessible by the 106 bus line between Park City and Heber.
This is Utah, not California. This is Wasatch County, not Summit County. When does the tax and spending stop? What services should government be providing? I ask again, why should county taxpayers pay for free Uber or Lyft rides for anyone that can download and operate the app?
Councilmember Mark Nelson shared a public comment resident Angie Richardson emailed to the council, saying that she was, quote, opposed to a service that benefits just a few of the citizens. But Nelson says her comments made him see the issue differently.
Our tax dollars pay for a lot of services that benefit just a few of the citizens. That isn't necessarily a bad thing. When I read her comment, it made me think to myself, have I ever used the pickleball courts that we spent taxpayer dollars? When's the last time I checked a book out of the library? Never. How about our great skate park? I think that the people who are using this, not all of them, but many of the people who are using this really need this, and it really helps them.
Councilmember Carl McMillan added he knows elderly county residents who can be more independent because of High Valley Transit services. The tax resolution passed with a 4-2 vote. Council members Kendall Crittenden and Luke Searle voted against the resolution, and Eric Rowland was absent. Crittenden said he wanted more discussion of how funds would be allocated before the vote.
I'm more in favor of increasing the paratransit rather than additional microtransit or expanded bus hours. I'd perhaps like to see a greater percentage than the 25 go to public safety.
Currently, the resolution provides for 25% of the tax revenue to go to public safety needs and 75% to go to public transportation, but those amounts could be amended in future council meetings. The tax will add a cost of 3 cents for every $10 in purchases. It will go into effect in January. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start first with the community health assessment. Tell us what it is and how much longer do people have to participate in it?
So every 5 years, we do a community health assessment, and this is to assess what the priorities and concerns regarding health are in the community. And this is important because we have state-level data. We have really robust data sets here in Utah for public health data, for health outcomes. But we really want to hear what the concerns are in the community, and that way we can tailor our services, our programs, everything that we do at the health department can go toward what the community wants to see. So this will influence what we do next year for our community health improvement plan, and that will affect the next 5 years of planning for our programs and services. So we're really encouraging all of our citizens, all of those who live, work in the community to take the survey and help provide that data that will influence those things.
So it's a survey. What are some of the questions that people can expect when they get online?
They can expect questions regarding mental health, regarding priorities they're concerned about in the community. Are they concerned about environmental issues? Are they prepared for an emergency? Everything that runs the gamut you could see in public health that we would like to have more data on that we can't get elsewhere, you can see in that survey. And there's also opportunities to provide additional information for topics that may not be on the survey as well.
Okay. People find it online then?
Yes, it is online. It is on our website at summitcountyhealth.org/CHA, so Community Health Assessment, CHA24. And that is also available on our social media. You can find access to that there. There's QR codes and things that you'll see pop up, as well as in our newsletter.
Okay. You cut it off when?
We cut it off around November. So we're hoping to gather input through the survey through November, as well as different focus groups. Those are other opportunities that groups can provide input, and those will be happening throughout the summer and in the next coming months.
All right. How many responses that you've had so far? Any idea?
About 300, and we launched at the end of May, so we're pretty happy with that. We have had kind of a soft launch promoting the CHA, so our community health assessment, and so we're hoping as we get going that we have more promotional efforts, that we can have our snowball effort, that people will encourage their friends and community members to take that survey as well.
Okay, but when you talk about more than 40,000 people in the county, that's really kind of dismal.
As I say, we've had a soft launch, and so that has been pretty good turnout so far. We're hoping to get around 1,000, and we'd really love to get great representation from our Latino community in there as well.
Okay, so it's in Spanish as well, and you're
yes.
putting the word out?
Yes.
All right, let's see. Also, the health department working on the public health emergency preparedness accreditation. What's this?
So many people have heard about our efforts to look at public health accreditation generally. So this is a proportion of that, as well as our community health assessment. This is separate, but something that is required for broader public health accreditation. So public health emergency preparedness accreditation is how we can show that we're maintaining readiness and improving our community's capacity to respond to large-scale emergencies. So by going through this process, we're showing that we are taking the necessary steps to be ready in an emergency and that we have all the capacities available to the community to respond to an emergency. So this includes things like our training plans, response plans, exercises, and a big proportion of that is also our Medical Reserve Corps. And this was the group that was very beneficial during COVID to help with our vaccination efforts. You may remember the efforts at the film studio. These folks are excellent to have, and we are looking to have more people sign up to volunteer to be part of the Medical Reserve Corps. And that's something that you don't have to have any sort of background level expertise. We're always looking for medical professionals, of course, but we want anyone of any walk of life to help there. And you can sign up to to participate in that at our website as well. So summitcountyhealth.org, under the services section, you can click public health preparedness to learn how you can help. Those are things that you will learn life-saving skills as part of that volunteer effort, as well as things like CPR, stop the bleed training, and any sort of background experience age is welcome to join.
All right, so you are required to be accredited?
For a public health emergency mm-hmm. preparedness, yes. So that is something that to receive our federal funding and state funding that we are accredited for. And it's something that is part of our steps working towards broader public health accreditation.
Yeah, so what does it take to be accredited? I mean, what are some of the tasks that you have to do?
We have to complete an assessment. So you'll notice on our community health assessment, we have the questions related to emergency preparedness. We also have to assess how ready our staff is in terms of their training needs, what they know, what they don't know, and how we can fill those gaps going forward over the next year.
All right. Recycle Utah's upcoming Green Drinks event, you're involved?
So our team is involved. This is led by our sustainability program by Emily Quinton and Megan Nick. This is coming up very quickly, July 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Three Springs Ranch in Oakley. So they, every other month, they have a Green Drinks event. And they sponsor different community vendors and community agriculture that supports sustainable and environmentally friendly agricultural practices. So they highlight local farms and food-related businesses, and there'll be speakers including South Summit Trails Foundation, Root Revival, and of course the host of the event, Three Springs Ranch in Oakley. And it's a great way to learn and celebrate our local businesses and support our local food system that tries to have that sustainable approach in agriculture going forward. So you can register. They're encouraging folks to register before the event at Recycle Utah's website. So recycleutah.org/event and then July Green Drinks event.
Okay. And I know the Summit County Council is contemplating approving a 0.5% increase on the sales tax, which would be about 50 cents on every applicable purchase of $100 for November's ballot. This would support emergency services and help reduce the impact of tourism on Summit County locals. So would the health department receive any of this funding for emergency services?
No, this is completely separate. So our funding strategy for the health department, we try to rely on 60% grant funding and 40% county funding. So most of our programs have mostly federal and state grants that they rely upon, and then some of our programs have that county funding that they rely upon, most of which they try to cover through things like fees and making sure those fees reflect what they need to do for their services. And then we have general funds that we reach into for the county that can help support those efforts as well.
Okay, so is this a different emergency services? Because as we just talked, the health department had a major role in how the pandemic was managed back in 2020. I mean, that was emergency services, yeah?
Yes, so this is separate from our COVID funding, which supported all those efforts, like you mentioned, for vaccination and around COVID there. So that was federal and state dollars. So this will be separate.
Okay. And in terms of that grant funding, I mean, would that mean that programs go away if those grants aren't received?
That is definitely a risk, which is why as we determine what the health needs and priorities are of the community through our community health assessment, we really try and have that flexibility for our staff to reach out and identify federal or state grants that can support the efforts that are important to Summit County. And that way we can keep bringing in the funding there. As we know, every time there's an administration change, whether that's at the state level, at the federal level, all of that grant funding is potentially up in the air, and we do rely on that to support a lot of our programs going forward.
Okay, and it is mosquito season. Have we had any reports of mosquitoes carrying West Nile or any other bad disease?
So mosquitoes are always carrying bad disease. Right now, we do not have West Nile virus reported in Utah, but every year we do have a handful of cases that show up in animals and in people. So currently we have 8 states who are reporting West Nile virus. The closest to Utah is in Arizona. And the risk with West Nile, often symptoms show up as mild, but it can be neuroinvasive to our neurological system, whether brain, nerves, other things, and can cause long-term disability. And so that's something that we really want to precaution caution people against. There is no vaccine for West Nile or many mosquito-borne illnesses, so we really want people to take precautions to protect themselves from getting bitten by mosquitoes. So that's wearing long sleeves, long pants, making sure that you're using bug repellent, and anything that you can do to keep active, keep moving, things like that. Mosquitoes now bite during the day as well as in the evening at hours, and so making sure that as you're going outside any time of day, putting that sunscreen and insect repellent on is very key.
Yeah, and what about like the home remedies so you don't have to spray that DEET on you? I mean, you know, people have said, oh, eat more garlic or take B vitamins. I mean, is there any truth to that?
Some and some not. We really recommend that folks go to the EPA's website for a list of EPA-certified insect repellent, and that way they can see which natural remedies are effective and which ones they can choose from. There are ones that are effective for all different types, whether you're looking for something like DEET, something like a eucalyptus lemon type thing. You can see a whole list there, and there are options available for all ages, pregnant women, children, so you can take your pick from all the lists that they have.
Okay, Kendra, anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks for coming in. Kendra Babbitts is the Deputy Director of the Summit County Health Department. Local singer-songwriter Mary Beth Maziar, also co-host of The Mountain Life, offering another round of summer song camp. She joins me now in studio with details. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. So what is song camp? It sounds fun.
You know what? It's something different. There are so many wonderful outdoor activity camps here, but this is something for the musicians. As a kid, I was one who was so into reading and playing the piano and writing poetry, and it's created this wonderful career as a musician for me, so I decided to try to pass on some of the knowledge that I've learned to teenagers who are really excited about playing music and performing on stage, but maybe need a little bit of guidance.
Yeah. I recently heard a story, though, of you growing up. I mean, you were seven, and it was like, what was it that you knew that this is what you were going to do?
I feel so lucky about that. I just, I felt like I needed a piano, and I was asking my parents, where's our piano? And they're like, we don't have a piano. I'm like, well, we need to get one. And my dad was an eye doctor, and one of his patients said, I got a piano in the barn. So they threw it in the basement and figured I would just pound away on it and have fun. And it ended up being, a little premonition of something that I was meant to do.
All right, so listen to your kids.
That's right. If they show some interest, give them a little bit of support.
All right, so who is Song Camp for?
It's for teenagers. Usually, the best group is 12 to 19. Usually that sweet spot tends to be around 12, 13, 14, when kids are really forming their identity. You know, they're starting to write in their journals. They're starting to have a little bit more content and drama in their lives, and it's a wonderful way to work through some of that angst that starts arising when you're a young and strong-feeling child.
Okay, so when is Song Camp happening?
It's actually coming up soon. It's next week. It starts on Monday. It's Monday through Friday from 11 to 3 each day.
All right. And where is it held?
It's at a private home in Pinebrook. And then we do spend one day at an auditorium so that they can get the feeling of working with an actual mic and a sound system and a sound person and kind of just a little bit of the jitters to imitate some of the jitters you would feel in a live performance.
Yeah, so a four-hour camp. I mean, what happens during those 4 hours?
It almost seems short, but it's an intense and rigorous and challenging and fun activities. Like when you're putting yourself out there, like singing in front of people, reading your thoughts, trying to make them into lyrics, it's a little bit vulnerable. And so that we do a lot of stuff with working with each other, like co-writing, and then we'll do little bits where people separate and work on something and come back together. So by the end of that 4 hours, people are pretty worked. It's interesting.
Yeah, so how much musical experience does a kid need?
They actually don't need musical experience. It's wonderful if you have it. That's terrific. But if your child doesn't, but is showing a lot of interest, that's what they need. If they're passionate or interested or just excited about music, that's all they need to do. And I actually became a professional musician before I could even really read music very well. So some of those obstacles that people might feel are in the way of them and having some work and dreams in music don't necessarily need to be there.
Yeah. So what do you provide?
I am the facilitator, so I have tons and tons of basic knowledge and strategies that I pass on to them. Everything from the formula for what makes a pop song. And this is largely pop music, but it's any genre, you know, country, I don't know, all the kinds that are out there, rock, pop, punk.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, I mean, what if a kid wants to be a rapper, a Kendrick Lamar or a Cardi B rather than a Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran, which is kind of your
background. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know that I'm going to bring a lot to their rap practice, but even rap songs or songs that you might not recognize still have this wonderful framework that the Western musical mind has come to expect in music. So I kind of walk them through those basics, and then how to play songs by ear, how to collaborate with another person, how to fit lyrics that sound and feel natural and actually move people.
All right, so you'll be kind of coordinating the camps and leading them, but you say you'll have others helping you?
Yeah.
Like who?
Yeah, like in the past we've had Brian Richards from Mountain Town Music. He comes and tells a little bit about the, you know, the booking side. If you want to do gigs, if you want to play out professionally, what kind of things does a booker look for? How do you get started? We have other recording engineers who come and talk about what it takes to have a good studio experience. It's different every year, and so I've got a lot of wonderful professional friends in my life, and I just call up them and see if they would come and help, and most of them are really excited to.
Okay, so after the 5 days, will there be an opportunity for the kid? I mean, they'll have a song and an opportunity to perform it, or?
Yeah, we don't have that date set yet, but I will make sure that it's on the calendar. But last year we had a show at Miners Park, and the kids came and performed, and their parents and friends and family and just random strangers off the street came in and listened, and it was a great experience because they weren't all able to be there, but for them to actually have a show experience, and they can do original songs that they've worked on, or if they're more comfortable with it, they can do some familiar songs. But it's a great way to kind of amp up towards a big finale.
Yeah, so do they actually just sing, or are you provide the accompaniment, or they also learn how to either play the guitar or the piano?
Well, I can't really teach in a week the basics of instrumentation, so most of the kids come with a little bit of awareness of how to play something, or they're just singers. And in that case, I can accompany them, and it's shocking how many kind of karaoke-style tracks and easy beats you can come up with on even the iPad and different ways. So we can come up with tracks together if they're not instrumentalists.
Okay. So that's exciting. I mean, it's a public concert if they want to be.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
Okay. Well, what makes a good song? I mean, there's good songs out there, but there's also popular songs which are just popular. I mean, yeah. What do you think makes a good song?
I think a good song is one that moves my body or moves my heart or moves my mind. So if it makes me tap my toes and it's in my head like a little earworm, that's fun. Songs are kind of like trees or flowers. You know, maybe some of them are meant to be in your life for a little while and some are meant to be kind of themes of your life. So anything that moves your body, your mind, or your heart is usually something that has some lasting power for me.
Okay. So the cost of the 5-day camp?
It's $300. I do have a couple scholarships still available, and I would love to put them to use. So if you have a teenager who would like to pursue something like this, please get in touch with me, because I would never want to let cost keep somebody from taking it.
Okay. And then how do people register?
They register at marybethmusic.com. That's my site, and it's right on the homepage. And I do want to make sure to thank the Michael J. Richards Foundation, who is one of our supporters, as well as Julie Hopkins Real Estate and several families in Park City who donated some money to support young music lovers and writers. So,
okay. All right. So camp starts next week. How many more spots do you got available?
I think I have about 6. Oh. So I would love to fill them and have some fun. So
okay.
Come on out. Let me know.
All right. Park City Song Camp 2024. Mary Beth, thanks so much.
Oh, thanks, Leslie.
Well, a committee to narrow down the number of applicants for the Women's Giving Fund annual grant has selected 3 finalists. Now it's up to members of the fund to decide who gets the largest grant ever. I spoke with Rebecca Blanchett last week. She's Park City Community Foundation Member Services Manager. So maybe just start, Rebecca, with just a little bit of background. This all works with the campaign that originally started with 1,000 members.
Yeah, and we're now up to 2,190 members. So getting really close to that 2,200 number mark. And so our Women's Giving Fund Steering Committee narrowed down out of 22 applications this year to 3 finalists. And we have made videos with each of those finalists, and you can view those on our website at parkcitycf.org. And the 3 finalists are the People's Health Clinic, Mountain Mediation Center, and Summit Community Gardens and Eats.
All right. Can you talk to us a little bit about how those finalists out of the 22 were chosen?
Yeah. So we have the committee receives all of the grant applications, and we have a system online that they're able to rank the applications against a set of standards, I would say, and like questions that we've put forth. And then we come together as a group and have conversations about it. That conversation lasts about 3 hours with the intent to walk away with those 3 finalists.
All right. And how much money is on the line?
$125,000 we're granting out this year. The big grant award will be $75,000. And each of the runners-up will both receive $25,000.
And that 25 is pretty much what the first group winner won. I mean, and that's, you've got that money because of the endowment growing and...
It's the endowment has grown over the years, and then also in 2022, you'll remember we did a big push to double the size of the membership, which we did, and we continue to grow, but we also added a current use fundraising element. And so this year, from the endowment, we did pull about $57,000, and the rest of that is made up through current use fundraising. So when someone joins now or gives us a gift, we split it. Half goes into the endowment, and half goes to current use fundraising. So I'm not very fast at math, Leslie, but I think it's around $68,000-$70,000 that came from the current use fundraising.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, and that's just this year, huh?
Yes, yeah.
Impressive. Maybe talk to us, if you can, about how the finalist will spend the money if, in fact, they win it.
Great. Yeah. So I will read each of their, like, a little summary of their grant proposals. So the People's Health Clinic will provide urgent reproductive health care for our uninsured community members through family planning, education, contraception access, prenatal and postpartum care and support. Mountain Mediation Center will provide low-income families with services to navigate housing stability and family conflicts through landlord, tenant, and domestic mediation programs that prevent eviction homelessness and provide a path forward for women facing divorce. And then finally, Summit Community Gardens and Eats will instill lifelong healthy eating habits and provide 1 to 2 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables per lesson to about 2,000 plus local school-aged children through hands-on cooking, nutrition, and gardening programs.
All right. And the whole idea behind the Women's Giving Fund was that the money would be used to support women and children?
Correct.
All right. So that's how it's got to be.
Yes. So that is like the baseline of every grant application that we see come through has to support women plus and children in Summit County.
All right. And being a member of the Women's Giving Fund gives you what, a vote?
Yeah, so to be a Women's Giving Fund member is a $1,000 gift. You can also set up a recurring donation. Until you get to that $1,000, we count people as members right away. So you are welcome to join now, and you can vote through July 8th. That is Monday. And you can get your vote in for this year's grant award. And I would also like to add a big component of Women's Giving Fund, and that huge piece of why the grant has grown is our Wonder Women. And those are people who are really committed to Women's Giving Fund, and they give us $1,000 annually on top of their initial membership fee. Or they can also set up a recurring donation. So we have some people who do that $84 a month. We have some people who do $35 a month or $250 a year. They're just setting up a recurring donation. And that's really, like, that is helping us grow the grant.
Okay. So voting closes when then?
July 8th, Monday.
Monday. Okay.
At 11:59 p.m. Get your votes in.
All right. And then how do members vote? Do they need a special link or anything?
They can go online to parkcitycf.org, find our Women's Giving Fund page, and we've got a Vote Now button, and that's where all the videos are. And you can also RSVP to come to our grant celebration, where you'll be the first to hear who the winner of the award is.
Okay. And that's happening
on July 10th at Red Pine Lodge.
All right. And there is a fee to it this year.
Yeah. We charge $25 per ticket, and that is helping to cover the cost of the event. We get Vail is an incredible sponsor of all of our work, and they sponsor most of that event. But as you know, the costs of labor and food have gone up, and so we don't want that to come out of the fund. And so we've just asked members to do $25. Open bar, great food, good time.
Okay. Anything else people want to know?
That's it.
Okay. Rebecca,
thanks. Thanks so much, Leslie.
That's Rebecca Blanchett with Park City Community Foundation, Member Services Manager. Well, the Sundance Film Festival looking for a new home for 2027 and beyond, and it's moving into the third phase of its search. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the next step will likely include site visits.
The Sundance Film Festival announced in April it was looking for a new host location for 2027 and beyond. Cities nationwide answered a call for proposals June 21st, detailing their plans for hosting the event. Utah is one of a handful of locations that submitted plans. The state proposal is a joint effort involving Park City, the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau, Summit County, Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, Visit Salt Lake, and the Utah Film Commission. However, Lindsay Nicola from the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office shared a few more details during the July 2nd Salt Lake City Council meeting. She said Sundance is now moving into the third phase of its search.
No official timing on feedback for the RFP phase, so we're not sure when we'll hear back from Sundance on this submission, but we anticipate phase three of this process will include site visits and work groups.
Nicola said the Utah team proposed hosting the festival in both Park City and Salt Lake City, though it's unclear how events would be split up. While Park City has been the primary host of the festival since 1981, the festival was originally held in Salt Lake City, and the city has continued to host various Sundance screenings since Park City took over. Sundance is expected to choose a festival location for 2027 and beyond by the end of this year or early 2025. Park City will host the 2025 and 2026 Sundance Film Festivals. Atlanta and Boulder, Colorado are among the other communities hoping to host the festival. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Now in its 41st season, the Park City Chamber Music Festival returns to Park City this weekend. In the studio with details, I have the festival's co-founder, Russell Harlow. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Leslie.
I'm going to need you on that microphone. I guess that one's not working there.
Okay.
Thank you. So we were just off air talking a little bit about just the name changes over the years. I mean, it used to be known as the Deer Valley Music Festival, then the International Music Festival, then the Beethoven Festival.
Yes, we've gone through a lot of permutations. International we dropped pretty early because we kept getting people calling us from other parts of the world thinking that it was an international music festival. So we got a lot of people from Jamaica wanting to come and play, and a lot of people from West Africa and that sort of thing. But it's not that kind of music. It's a bit different.
So we've got a name that just basically tells us what it is.
Absolutely.
Chamber Music in Park City.
Park City Chamber Music Society, and we put on the Park City Chamber Music Festival.
Okay.
And actually, we had that name before, but now we're back to it, and we're going to stick with it.
Okay. I always liked the Beethoven Festival, and that kind of came about when you used to walk in the parade and carry down a statue of Beethoven with you.
Absolutely. That was Leslie's idea. She had Leslie Harlow, a violist who founded the festival, and she had this great idea that everybody knows Beethoven. So if we were to call it the Beethoven Festival, everybody would know what it means, except that maybe a lot of people thought, how much did Beethoven write and how much will we be hearing over and over again because it's all Beethoven, but it isn't. It's classical music from all the eras, from Baroque to contemporary.
All right.
Yeah.
So you are clarinetist?
I'm
how
a
do
clarinetist.
I say that? Clarinist, okay.
Absolutely.
All right, and you've been doing that for years.
I was in the Utah Symphony from 71 to 2012 and started the Nova Series downtown in Salt Lake, which is chamber music, and then I met up with Leslie, and here we are.
Okay. Here so the are. Festival starts Saturday, July 13th. What have you guys got planned?
We've got the Amadeus Trio. It's a wonderful group. It is Hiroko Sasaki, piano from New York, previously Japan, David Tai from New York, and Timothy Baker. He's he actually lives in Kentucky.
Okay, so we've got piano, and then what are the other two ones?
Piano, violin, and cello, and I'll be joining them for a wonderful piece by Paul Hindemith, written in 1938. A lot of people are afraid, who know classical music, are a little afraid of Paul Hindemith because he's can be very, very serious. But this is such a beautiful work, written at the time just before the Second World War, when tensions in Germany, of course, were pretty strong. And his wife was Jewish. He had to leave the country. But he wrote this piece in 1938, I think when he was teaching at Curtis and Tanglewood in Boston and Philadelphia. Anyway, it's a wonderful work for a piano trio and clarinet. And it's got everything you'd ever want from any kind of a classical piece. It's just beautiful.
So you're calling it the Amadeus Trio. I'm assuming there's got to be some Mozart in there? No.
Are we doing Mozart? No, they're not playing Mozart. They're playing Mendelssohn, and they're playing not Dvorak, but they're playing Mendelssohn. They're playing Beethoven, the Ghost Trio, and they're doing a Beethoven cello sonata, number 5, and the Hindemith, and a trio by Joaquin Turina, which is a 20th century Spanish composer. Absolutely gorgeous work.
All right. So that's just the first concert out of how many have you got planned?
We have 18 concerts. We had 18 last year. We have 18 this year, and they're all going to be in Park City. Last year we did some in Salt Lake, but these are all going to be in Park City. We're doing an experiment about Saturday nights to see if we what kind of an audience we can bring in for Saturday evening at 7:30. For the concerts, and then Sunday at 5 in the afternoon. And these two concerts are at the Park City Community Church, just off of Highway 224. And then there's the Monday concert in the park, which everybody loves. Everybody loves. Bring your picnic lunch and your wine or your whatever drinks that you want. And that will be the what we're doing each week. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
All right. What time do the park concerts?
Park concerts start at 6:30.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then the cost for the indoor concerts are how much?
The cost for the indoor concerts, general admission, is $35. Seniors are $25. And students are free.
Wonderful.
Yes.
All right. Tickets are online or...
You can get tickets online. The best way to go about it is to go to pccms.org.
All right.
And tickets are available there.
All right. And the musicians that you use, I mean, these are folks who come to Park City just for this to play?
Repeat that.
I said the people that you've got coming to perform. I mean, they come to Park City from all over the world or all over
absolutely.
The country to play.
Well, we have some people. We have a violinist from who is the one of the premier violinists in Mexico City. He used to be in the St. Louis Symphony for many years, but retired and went back to Mexico. Manuel Ramos, a wonderful violinist. He's a member of the Bellas Artes. Of Mexico, and then we have someone from Canada, a younger man, Mark Jokic. His father used to play with us for years, and Philippe. And so Mark is going to join us. So we've got a new generation. We've got our older players, Arturo Del Moni, who is the concertmaster of the New York City Ballet, and he has a trio with two gentlemen, one from France, Matthew Cognier, and another fellow cellist, Kenneth Kuo.
All right. So my guess is that you're not paying these folks a lot. I mean, not based on these ticket prices.
No, we're everybody gets paid. Yeah. Everybody gets paid the same amount, and it's a good wage.
Oh, good. Okay.
But one has to, you know, because you know, it's sometimes we think of music as, oh, you know, they're doing it for fun, they're doing it for love. In the beginning of the festival, 41 years ago, people came for nothing, because there weren't any chamber music festivals. And so then we realized, after time went by, that it was important to pay people. So we started raising money, and we do have to raise quite a bit of money to make this happen.
Okay. And so how is it that you're funded? I mean, just donations?
We go for donations, ticket sales. There's a salon concert on the 17th of August. And we charge a little more for that, because it's in a home, and it's got food and wine and good company, and it's just going to be a lovely thing. It's the way, actually, chamber music was intended to be, or initiated to be played.
All right. And you also getting some of the rap funding?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we got restaurant tax funding, which was absolutely fantastic, and we got RAP funding, and we get funding from the Eccles Foundation, and there are others.
Okay. So is it just a summer concert now? It's not spread out over the year?
Yes, we are spread out over the year. As a matter of fact, I'm initiating an outreach program, which I want to spend the winter months and the off summer months, okay, with an outreach program in the schools. I've already met with the teachers, the music teachers of the schools, and we're going to work in tandem to help the students and to help the teachers to inspire the students and help the teachers with techniques coming from these professionals.
All right, so we're talking Summit County Schools?
Yes.
Yeah.
Summit County Schools.
Yeah. Well, it used to be back in the day, I mean, you know, we had music class. That was part of the curriculum.
It's going away.
Yeah.
It's going away. No, there's no music in elementary schools anymore. And so we're gonna work to try to fill in that gap. In the spring, we do have a wonderful quartet coming in June, the Dolly Quartet. It's, they're made up of all Latino players who are based in Philadelphia, and then we're going to do a concert with Mark Kosower, who is the principal cellist of the Cleveland Orchestra, in April. So we've got a full calendar.
Okay. All right, again, it's the 41st season of the Park City Chamber Music Festival. You can get more information, pccms.org.
.org.
Okay, anything else you want to mention, Russell?
Oh, I think that does a lot, you know, except that please come, enjoy. Even if you're not sure that you would enjoy or you're not used to going to a classical concert, we're very easygoing. We're not formal in the least. And so come and enjoy, and there's refreshments at the church and at the intermissions, and you'll have a good time.
Okay. Russell, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Russell Harlow, again, with the Park City Chamber Music Festival. Park City announced the 4th of July parade winners. KPCW's Christine Weller has the details.
More than 70 entities participated in this year's Sustainable Stars and Stripes-themed parade, with awards given to participants in six categories. Community Spirit Awards went to floats from the Park City Community Foundation and the National Ability Center. The Frog Prince Art Car, made from an old motorhome, and Spa Depot of Utah floats won the Humor and Funk Award. The Wills Foundation wowed the crowd with its addition of a live band and earned the Crowd Engagement and Community Favorite Award. The annual Youth Award went to the Park City Ice Miners and Park City Soccer Club, which featured young athletes. Four organizations shared the Heritage, Traditions, and History Award: Park City Police, Park City Fire, the Egyptian Theater, and the Park City Sailing Association. Deer Valley entered a float made from used decorations and recycled materials to earn the Environmental and Sustainability Award. The resort shared the honor with the Stein Collection. Although not every float could win an award, all contributed to the jovial and increasingly popular Park City Parade. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the Keatley Square development will include grocery shopping, restaurants, retail, and office space. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports that the Wasatch County Council last week debated just how much parking to require.
The development is planned for east of US 40 near the Jordanelle Reservoir and across from Deer Valley's East Village Resort expansion. But it's been difficult to agree on how much parking the new shopping center will need. When the developer proposed 140 spots at a Wasatch County Council meeting in September, just over half the number code requires, council members were hesitant to approve the plans. 10 months later, instead of the 270 parking spots the council wanted, leaders have agreed to 154. The new number is based on the findings of a traffic study done this spring using Midway as a comparison. The developer argues alternative modes of transportation will help make up the difference and make the area more pedestrian friendly. At a county council meeting Wednesday, Councilmember Mark Nelson agreed with that logic.
Transit is going to be a big deal, and shuttles are going to be a big deal, and in the summer, bikes are going to be a big deal. I think it's going to be different than the wild, wild west of Midway, where everyone has a car.
Councilmember Steve Farrell pointed out there won't be much biking in winter when peak tourism is expected to bring the most traffic to the area, given Keatley Square's location right across the street from Deer Valley's East Village. But in the end, council members tentatively agreed to the lower number of parking spots. They unanimously approved the proposal for 154 spaces with the requirement that the developer add more spots if that number is found to be insufficient. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And South Summit County Trail Builders are inviting locals to volunteer this Saturday, July 13th, to help clean up the growing Weber Pathway Trail. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports on the effort to connect Peowa to the Uintas.
Oakley City leaders and the South Summit Trails Foundation are working on a big idea. That's connecting Peowa to Oakley to the Uinta Mountains. Trails Foundation co-founder Howard Sorensen estimates the system, which will include 7 miles of trails near and along the Weber River, is about 70% connected. That project has come together through a patchwork process over the past 7 years. The trails have been developed in partnership with the Summit Land Conservancy, which is protecting roughly 200 acres from development.
We now have what we call a string of pearls that begins clear down on Wooden Shoe in Peowa.
The public can get a first look and help clean the trails for the summer, Saturday, July 13th. Sorensen says they're focusing on the Stevens Grove Trail, which starts a quarter mile down Millrace Road and saw some flooding this year. They'd also like to clean up the section between New Lane Road and Franson Lane near Oakley's New Riverbend Park.
We'll be working on pruning, cutting back the grasses and what have you. And it's a great opportunity to come out and just see this beautiful new trail system and be a part of sprucing it up to where it's a joy to ride a horse, ride a bike, hike.
Motorized vehicles are not allowed, but e-bikes are. Sorensen says there haven't been reports of conflicts or people speeding. Since the trail system has grown, trail builders have renamed it the Weber River Pathway. Sections sport handmade signs from Oakley-based Band Supply Company. Next year, Sorensen hopes a new bridge can connect Peowa's Marchant Meadows Ranch to the Stevens Grove Trail. Trail builders will work on final connections at the foot of the Uintas next year, too. But he says connecting the trails in Oakley's city center may take years. The City Planning Commission is evaluating a master plan development application to completely redevelop the city center. If that redevelopment happens, a provision in city code requires a trails component. For Saturday, cleanup volunteers should meet at the cell towers on New Lane at 9 a.m., July 13th. Sorensen recommends bringing large tree pruners or weed whackers, water, and work gloves. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Members of all 30 of Park City's leadership classes are invited to the annual picnic tonight, which will send the program's founder off into retirement with good wishes and welcome his replacement. The annual picnic will be held at City Park this year. It's set for 5 p.m. at the South End Pavilion. The city will provide a main dish. Participants are asked to bring a dish to share and their own adult beverages. Leadership Alumni Event Chair Michael Fisher says partners and children are welcome, but not pets. Outgoing Leadership Park City Director Miles Rademan will be there, as well as newly named Director Scott Van Hartesveld.
Scott showed up at our last board meeting that we had earlier in the month, and we had a chance to get to know him. And he seems extremely excited about the new role, honored. He's like, pinch me, I'm so excited. So I think he'll do a good job.
All leadership alumni are welcome to continue to support the organization by becoming a member. Membership dues are $50 a year, include free admittance to the monthly events, as well as discounted ski days at Park City Mountain and Deer Valley Resorts. Alumni Board President Betsy Wallace says they recently conducted their first survey, which solicited the responses of their 320 members. She says the results will help the board reboot and decide how to best interact with all of the classes. Other upcoming alumni events include a round-robin pickleball tournament at the PC Mark on July 9th and the August alumni party at the Aztec Art Ranch in Browns Canyon, hosted by Zaphod and Lola Beelbrox on August 10th. It'll feature live music, camping, and toilet bowling, something you need to see for yourself. Also, save the date for a program that member Janet Quilter started last year called All X. That's coming up October 10th. The application period for Leadership Class 31 is now open. Applications are due by August 23rd. The links to applying for more information about the Leadership Park City Alumni Association can all be found online at kpcw.org.